What's it like for others? You're not alone in this struggle, and today we're going to hear an interview with another sex addict talking about his own experiences on this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Today we're going to hear an interview I did with a man who is willing to share his experience in recovery from sex addiction. Everyone's story is a little different. You'll hear him talk about how he sees all addicts being somewhat the same, too. While this interview and this podcast doesn't promote any 12-step fellowship, this gentleman does talk about his involvement with the 12 steps and what they've done for him. The Recovery Support Podcast is intended for those seeking their own sexual recovery and in no way is endorsed by or promotes any fellowship or program, and thereby it doesn't violate any of their traditions. We're going to start today's podcast with reading from the essay White Book, page 203, The Problem. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it. We gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. Please connect with me and make me whole, we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain. And we were ever driven inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples, we took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves, conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us. We were really losing ourselves. I approached Gary with the idea of sharing his story on recovery support, and he was willing to do so that he could be some way helping others. We've changed his name for this podcast for confidentiality's sake, and so without further ado, let's jump right in with me and Gary. So I'm sitting here with Gary. Gary has been in the 12-step fellowship for how long, Gary?
Since December 12th, 07.
Okay. Was that the first time that you did any kind of 12-step work?
Seriously, yes.
What do you mean?
It wasn't the first time I looked into it, but it was the first time I actually did it.
Okay. So before you had attended a couple meetings and just not gone farther with it?
Exactly.
Okay. At that point in 07, why did you start actually doing something with it at that point?
My marriage was falling apart. My brain was a mess. Like, I couldn't think straight. I couldn't function. My wife was going to leave. And I just wasn't happy with myself. Something needed to change.
Okay. And why 12 steps?
Honestly, because a lot of people at my church had a lot of success in 12-step recovery. And it just... And I grew up... My father was a minister, and I grew up, and he recommended the 12 steps to people, so it just seemed that's what I'll do. And counseling never worked. Therapy never worked.
How many times did you try that?
I've been in counseling my whole life. Okay. I'm messed up in the head.
Okay. What's been
Have you seen any difference since you started in 07 till today? We're now July of 09. What things have you seen change in your life?
In my life, my wife and I talk. We sleep in the same bed. I can hold a job now. Couldn't hold a job before. It wasn't even my addiction. It was just I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I was going to say whatever I wanted to say. I respect my boss now. I don't make inappropriate jokes at church or work. I'm an all-around... And I've actually calmed down a lot, which is funny because I'm a really hyper guy. But I've actually calmed down a lot.
Do you attribute this to 12 steps or something else?
It's the 12 steps and God. I attribute it to God working through the 12-step program. Because I tried everything. I tried everything to be polite. I tried everything to stop my addiction. I tried it all. Nothing worked except for surrendering my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him.
So you've done the 12 steps for a while now. How long before you started the program did you choose a sponsor?
First day, December 12th of 07. I left the meeting with the sponsor.
And have you stayed with that same sponsor?
Same guy.
Oh,
same guy.
Good for you. I know a lot of people switch around and people move or whatever, and you've been able to stay with the same one.
Yeah, well, I've wanted to a couple times, but I just came to the conclusion about 6 months ago that any... My natural instincts are screwed up, and I just need to do the exact opposite of what my body's telling me to do, because it doesn't work for me. So if my brain's telling me to switch your sponsor, it's probably just my addict. And I heard someone in another 12-step program say, when he took his one-year birthday cake, he says, I have a murderer inside my head, and it wants to kill me. And my addict wants me dead, if not physically, then spiritually. Walking Dead zombie. So I've stayed with that sponsor I've had because he's got 13 years of sobriety. I don't. So.
Do you see yourself, your addict, much different than other addicts?
We're all the same.
How so?
Drugs, alcohol, sex, gambling. We're all the same. How so? Well, we're all selfish. We're all self-centered. And we're all very grandiose, and we're all emotionally sensitive. The AA Big Book says that. Emotionally sensitive, grandiose, and selfish are the three that it uses. And every addict I've met is all three of those things. And we might choose different avenues to explore in our addiction, but I'm not unique at all. I'm just one of the guys.
And do you see any ways that you are different?
Well, I'm still me. You know, my personality is different than a lot of the people I've met. I mean, I might have the same things driving me, but I'm told I liven up meetings when I go. I'm the life of the party sort of guy. Like, I make things more fun is what I hear. So I guess I'm different in that respect. I've met a lot of addicts who are very serious people. I was just like, dude, laugh a little bit. And that's what I try to do. I try to be.
So I know in working with clients, I've seen a lot of addicts, and their stories have huge similarities, but they're also very different. Everywhere from somebody who sees six or seven prostitutes a week to somebody else who spends 3 and 4 hours a night looking at pornography, those two behaviors are different. Do you see your behaviors, the behaviors of your addict, much different from other addicts' behaviors?
Nah, there's nothing I've said at a meeting that nobody else has ever done, that no one else has not done. You know, there's always somebody in a meeting that has your kind of story, so... Again, I'm not unique.
Okay, what do you say to the guy who says, I've had an affair before, or I look at pornography when I get home at night and after my wife's gone to bed, but I'm really not an addict? What do you say to him?
I say he's got to hit his bottom. I say go out there, have some more fun, and tell me when your life is really, really messed up. Call me when you feel that you're an addict.
Okay, don't hit me with all your 12-step mumbo-jumbo and stuff. I'm saying I know I have a problem, but I'm just not an addict.
I know I have a problem, I'm just not an addict. If you have a problem and you're not an addict, see a counselor.
Okay.
See a therapist.
And I'm not paying you to say this.
I'm getting paid nothing.
Okay. When I first approached you with the idea of doing an interview for this podcast, you jumped right on it. What were you thinking?
I'm thinking I love the media. I am kind of a media junkie.
Okay.
But, I went to school for mass communication. I studied to be a radio and TV journalist. This is kind of, I live for this stuff. I love this stuff.
So this is an opportunity for you to get up on the table and be the life of the party.
You know, I actually called my sponsor before I started this because I didn't want this to be about me.
There's a very different avenue that this takes now when you say that. What is that about?
When you asked me to do this podcast, you wanted me to do a podcast on recovery. And I didn't want this to be a podcast on Gary. I wanted this to be a podcast about people getting recovered, not hearing my story. You know, so I just wanted to do the best 12th step that I can.
What does that mean, do the best 12th step? For people that don't know the 12 steps.
The 12th step is verbatim. I'm terrible at memorizing. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the addict and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's the 12th step. 12th step work is going out there, going finding an addict, and just talking to him, giving him your story, and just helping him recover. And I wanted this to be a proper 12th step job. I'm here to tell my story, not to bolster myself up and make myself look good, hey, look at how much I've changed, but to say there is a way out.
Is this work that you're doing about your addiction something that not only are you going to have to do this for the rest of your life, or is this an identity that you have now?
Can you restate the question?
Does it substitute for your addiction? Is this another addiction, just doing 12-step work?
When I started, my recovery was just as compulsive as my addiction was. When I started. Now it's just, it's who I am, but it's not an addictive part of me. Like, I don't have to do it. I want to do it. It's not a compulsion. Okay. It's a desire. And when I acted out my addiction, it was never desire. It was compulsion, which is totally different. And I do my 12-step work because my sponsor took the time out of his life to deal with me, a totally flawed, screwed-up, obnoxious jerk, when I came into the program almost 2 years ago. And he's been patient with me and stayed with me. So I do this because someone did it for me. Not to substitute. Because I'm going to be an addict the rest of my life. Nothing's ever going to take its place.
When did you decide that or realize that?
When did I realize that? After my first slip. I had gotten 4.5 months. I was doing good. I stopped calling my sponsor every day. Stopped going to as many meetings. And it hit me hard. Brick wall going 90 miles an hour. Got hit really hard. Almost lost my wife again. That's when I realized this is not going away. I'm not going to get better. I'm just going to have to work on it.
Okay, somebody out there is listening and saying, if you're not going to get better, why do you keep doing this?
Well, I'm going to try not to be that graphic. I'm not driving around the streets for hours at a time looking for anonymous sex. I'm not on the internet looking for anonymous sex. I'm not looking at porn. I'm not getting arrested. My crotch doesn't feel like raw meat, just totally ground up beef. Doesn't feel like that anymore. And I like that. And I might not, that lust might never go away. And I don't think lust is ever going away. But I don't I like not having to act on it. I had a choice yesterday, something that I wanted to do. That was my addict. And the impulse came. And usually when the impulse comes, I do it. Impulse reaction has been my whole life. And I had the choice to say no yesterday, and that was great.
Wow. Is that different for you?
Oh, yeah. 2 years ago, I'd have done it. Hmm. At work, I don't care if I was at work, I'd have done it. Gary does what Gary wants to do.
But you said you're not getting better.
I've said I'm not going to be cured.
Okay.
That's what you mean. Yeah. I'm not going to be cured. My addiction's never going away. Mm. But I can live with it.
Okay, that's what it sounds like. You are learning how to live with it effectively so it doesn't disrupt your life like it did.
Right, exactly. And I'm not controlling it and enjoying it. It's not something I do anymore. Because, one, there is no control and enjoy. I've tried that. It doesn't work.
What do you mean by control and enjoy?
Well, you know, I'm a married guy. I won't be in a committed relationship outside of that. I'll just have anonymous sex. That's not an affair. It's just sex.
Every guy does it, right?
Right. Okay. Right, exactly.
So that's, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to control it.
But it's not going to control me.
I see.
Which is a lie that the murderer inside my head tells me.
Hmm.
And it is a murderer that's giving me these great ideas that you can do it.
A lying murderer.
Oh, yeah. Liar, cheater. It's cheating me of my dignity, of my self-respect. It kills my spirit. Kills my relationship with God.
You've mentioned God a few times. What about somebody out there who's saying, that's nice that you believe in God and you go to church. I don't happen to believe in God.
You know, this is one of those things that I usually direct those people to my sponsor. I honestly don't have an answer for you. I don't. If you think you're an addict, go to a group that deals with your addiction. Mine is sexual compulsivity. Some people it's alcohol, some people it's drugs, some people it's painkillers, which I guess would be drugs, but find a group for you. If you don't believe in God, make the group your higher power. Because the steps never say anything about God. All they say is a higher power. And you can't really tell me that you don't believe in a higher power because your addiction is your higher power when you're living in it.
Mm-hmm.
You believe in a higher power. That pill, that prostitute, that drink, that's your higher power. So you have one. So you believe in one. But if you don't believe in the whole God thing, make the group your higher power. Go to them when you have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got to the program, my father's a minister. I've been raised in the church my whole life. I didn't pray to God for a couple months. I asked my sponsor, my group. My group was my higher power for a long time because I had this God concept down. I had it down. I know all the answers. I can give you all this theological mumbo-jumbo, but I was still acting out. So obviously I didn't know God that well. So it wasn't until recently that I really had this connection with my higher power, with God.
Okay. There's all kinds of people listening to this right now. Some have been in recovery for years. Some are trying to decide whether that they're really an addict or not. And pretty much everything in between. What kind of courage, strength, and hope do you have from your own experience that you think that could be helpful to others out there?
What courage, strength, and hope do I have? I am a hopeless addict. I do what my compulsion tells me to do. 2 years ago, that was me. My marriage was falling apart. My life, I couldn't hold a conversation. I couldn't do this 2 years ago because I couldn't stay concentrated for more than 30 seconds at a time. My courage, strength, and hope is that through the program and through a loving, merciful God, with a loving wife who's very supportive of my recovery, I go to a meeting a day, and she supports that. If I can stop, anybody can stop, because I'm bad. Like, I've been arrested. I've got a record. If I can stop, pretty much anybody can stop, because I'm hopeless. but through the program I have some kind of strength.
Well, that's very selfless of you as a selfish addict to take the time and do this to offer to somebody else, as well as just talk about this is what it's done for me in hopes that that's going to inspire somebody else and help them.
Well, if it's selfless, it's a new thing for me. It's not something I would normally do. I think I said previously, before I would come in here and do this for my ego, for my boosting up of myself, or, hey, look at my stories helping all these people. And, you know, I look back at 2 years ago and think of how big of a jerk I was. But it's honestly not about that now. This isn't about me. It's about something greater than me. Recovery is greater than me. So I'm just learning to accept that fact, that I'm not the hottest piece of junk in the world. Like, I'm not. I'm just another guy trudging the road of happy destiny. And whatever I can do to help, I will do.
And there you have another experience. Gary was willing to offer that to support others, and I offer my thanks to him. We're going to close today by reading from the S.A. White book, The Solution, on page 204. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding that none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. In closing, once again, I'd like to close with the third step prayer. You can find this by Googling third step prayer, or by turning to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 63. Those of you that know it, please join me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. You can email me with questions, feedback, and commentary at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. This podcast doesn't promote any program or fellowship and only informs about resources that I've found helpful to my clients. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com. Thanks for being with me for this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. Enjoy your week and have a sober day.